Welcome to the What's Percolating teleconference, discussing the latest in heartfelt mind, body, and spirit for peace, passion, and prosperity. Now here are your hosts, Gary Kobat and Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
It's a beautiful day in Southern California. This is Gary Kobat.
And it's sort of snowing a lot here in Maine. This is Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. It's a snow day here with school canceled, and it just is what it is. So we've got slippers on and sweats.
Wait a minute. What do you mean slippers? I mean, you got the boys out shoveling snow, right? They're getting their workouts in. They don't have a day off just because they don't have school.
They've got boots on and are playing out in the snow. I have slippers on, big fuzzy ones, too.
Ah, I see. All right. Nice and cozy.
Yeah.
What an awesome day, and what a great morning so far. Oh, my gosh, Michelle Phillips at michellephillips.com. You know, you go into a session, and you think you're going to talk about beauty, and so she's this world-class makeup artist, and she gets into the inner beauty of everybody, and that's just so special. So what a great, if you get a chance to listen to the download or the replay, that was awesome. And then yesterday, I can't even, oh my gosh, Sam Rose, the nutritionist, to spiritual psychologist, Dr. Margaret Paul, and Don Miguel Reese, Jr. I mean, it just goes on and on. Noah St. John, oh my gosh, what a great
Kevin
way to shift
Servo,
your thinking.
That was Kevin last night. Past my bedtime, talking to
right.
Kevin Sorbo, that was awesome.
So Sam, the nutritionist, goes, you know, the most important time to sleep is between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. And that's where you're going to get your most restful. Exactly. So we've got you up until midnight doing Best Ever You and What's Percolating Late Night, which was great. It was our inaugural show last night. And Kevin Sorbo, Hercules, was awesome and said he really wanted to play golf. I asked him, who would you really want to play golf with? And he goes, well, we've done Tiger Woods and we've done all of these people. And he goes, I really want to play golf with Marilyn Monroe.
And I think Abe Lincoln, too, or something was on
Abe
there.
Abe Lincoln, yes.
It was a great answer.
It was great. But what another special session we've got coming up. And it's a long term. I mean, it's, 30 years now, long-term friend that goes way back, streets of L.A., so to speak, and just watching him just continue to just raise the bar, and not only himself, but everybody around him. It's been a joy to be associated with him, and it's 1984 gold medalist in gymnastics, the first perfect 10 in United States gymnastics, Mitch Gaylord. Mitch, welcome.
Well, thanks, Gary. It's great to be here.
It's awesome.
Hi, Mitch.
Great.
Hi, Elizabeth. I guess you're cold over there. You're cold.
I'm
Gary's
cold.
Warm. And
it's
here
good.
In Texas, it's 25 degrees, so it's pretty cold here, too, but no snow.
But no snow, yeah.
Yes,
thank
there's
you
our weather report.
Yeah, we've covered it. Now the news by Mitch. Thank you for being with us. It's a really big honor to have you here, and I know there are so many people online listening and in the chat room and so forth. Gary, or Mitch, do you have a website, or are you on social media or anything like that where people can reach you or follow you? Or
we
didn't know whether to cover that or not.
I do have MitchGaylord.com, but it's under construction again right now because I'm redoing it. But that should be up in the next week or so, and that's basically just used for, you know, people who want to hire me for speaking engagements or appearances. And I have to admit, I never got into the social media stuff. You know, I won't take that step. I don't know if that's good or bad.
That's fine.
I'm the old-fashioned email guy.
No, and he's great. Well, you know, so is Eckhart Tolle, you know, and he wrote The Power of Now by hand on a park bench, right, up in the San Francisco area. So it goes, you know, don't feel challenged by that. But everybody wants to hear you speak, and I know you speak around the world. Is that what you're doing these days?
I do a lot of that. I've done that since the Olympics, and I just find it incredibly rewarding. It's fun for me to go out and see people inspired by that Olympic movement, you know, even this many years later, and just by sharing the story and people connecting to that moment and what it all means, it really lifts people's spirits, and that's really rewarding for me to have taken part in such an incredible event, And I still feel that way today. It's just one of those events that's, you know, like no other. I mean, it really brings the whole world together. So it's amazing.
And so when you hear the, you see the rings or you see the torch,
mm-hmm.
You know, I've always challenged you, now you know this, at 95, right? You're going to be the oldest torchbearer to go up to the torch and light it on an Olympics, right? You still up for that challenge?
Absolutely. If they ask me, I'll be there. Unless it's Sochi. Just kidding.
Maybe, yeah, there'll be some war stories, I think, coming out here naturally. Anyway, that was one of them. I challenged him many years ago to be that oldest torchbearer. But tell us, do you still get goosebumps?
I do. And you bring up the torch, and that in particular holds a very special place in my heart because when I was in the fourth grade, I hadn't even started gymnastics yet, so I started late. But the teacher for our assignment put a bunch of pictures on the table, and they were people from all different walks of life, you know, athletes, Nobel Prize winners, chemists, you name it, politicians, just incredible inventors. And my eyes went to a track and field picture, and I grabbed this shot, and I went home, and I did my school report on it, and I learned all about the Olympic Games, and I'm telling you, just a light switch went off that this is what I want to do someday. I want to go to the Olympics. I want to represent the country, and I want to win a gold medal. And I had no idea what sport it was going to be in. It's just that particular person inspired me. And, you know, obviously I'll cut to, you know, a 12-year journey into 30 seconds here. But I ended up making that dream come a reality. And in 1984, you know, going into the Coliseum, and one of the most exciting parts was when President Reagan came over the loudspeaker and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, the torch is making its way into the Coliseum." And nobody knew who it was running the torch at that time. And so there was a huge curiosity and excitement. And this guy comes running by me. And do you remember who it was in 1984?
I'm just like, is it Muhammad or somebody? Who was
it? It's a good guess. It's a track and field guy named Rayford Johnson, the same person I did my school report on in fourth grade.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I got the major, you know, it's meant to be, you know, this synchronicity, and it was just on a whole other level of coolness, if that's a good word for it. It's just inspiring and wonderful. What's that?
We use the word coolness a lot here and awesomeness, so it's all good.
All right, I'm in the good company then.
Oh, yeah, we have no rules. So when you were inspired by that, what was the very first gymnastics move you ever did? Do you remember?
Well, I was flipping as a young kid off of the bed and
furniture,
off diving boards
and
jumping off the roof pretending I was Superman. So I knew I wanted to fly. That was the first inspiration, and my earliest dreams were flying and being the hero. I would, you know, my kindergarten girlfriend on my back, taking her up into the air and, "Hey, check out the view down there of our kindergarten class." Those were literally my first dreams. So it was kind of natural when I started bouncing on a trampoline that, okay, I found my home. And that's really how it happened. My mom had to do something with all that energy that I had, and she enrolled me in a trampoline class at L.A. Valley College in Van Nuys, California.
I love it.
And that's how
it started.
I just started bouncing on that thing.
There needs to be like a gymnastics mom's club that repeats this, "Get off the furniture. Stop flipping around." Did your mom do that? My mom is probably giggling right now at how many times she must have said, you know, but when they say go for it, it's a totally different thing, isn't it?
It definitely is, and I think For my mom, watching all that, she wanted me to be safe. That was her. I mean, all moms, they're always worried that something bad's going to happen if, you know, you're in a dangerous environment. So she wanted to find an outlet for me. And I was really tiny when I was growing up. I didn't grow until later in life. So I wanted to play, you know, I did football, baseball, basketball. I did all of that. I was in Little League, and my original dreams were to be a running back in the NFL. Go figure. But that's what I wanted to do, and that just wasn't in the cards. So gymnastics wasn't that popular on the men's side. It's always been fairly popular on the women's side. So it was brand new to my whole family, and nobody had any idea where it could lead. You know, a college scholarship was kind of the first indication that, you know, wow, this is actually really, really worth it if you can get a college scholarship. And then as the years went by, you know, the Olympics became much more of where the vision went.
So,
Gary, talk.
Well,
you guys are speechless.
No, I am speechless, kind
no,
of.
I'm
trying to be quiet a little bit.
Let's just let it flow here because we're just so proud to have him here. And these are great stories. So, I mean, think of that journey. Oh, well, first of all, the first inclination I had was, so you manifested this.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your belief on manifestation? I mean, you saw this early as a child, and you lived your dream. Have you ever, like, took a step back and paused and said, wow, another energy going at work here, or what?
I definitely started to become aware of that years after the Olympics. So that was a very interesting transformation, because prior to the Olympics, I was tunnel visioned on just doing that, and I had no idea, you know, what was at work, what was at play. All I knew is that I had a burning desire, to make it and to get there. And if you ask, you know, any other athlete who's been there, that's the common thread. You know, a lot of people, you know, they want to get to a certain level in their sports, but if there's not that major passion and burning desire deep within you, it's rare that you'll ever make it. And that's the beauty of that. It is pure. There's no ulterior motives. It's just an inner feeling that this is what I'm meant to do. This is what I love to do. I get up every single day and give it my all because I want to, and I'm going. and of course, there's ups and downs on that journey, but if you get knocked down, that passion keeps you going, and that intensity keeps you going.
So let me ask you a question. Like, what's the temperature there now?
It's 25 right now.
Okay, Elizabeth, what's the temperature there?
Do I have to really say? No, it's probably 20, maybe somewhere around there. It's snowing. So
what you're saying is a burning desire that is so hot that 25 degrees is nothing.
It wouldn't matter what the temperature is. That's, I know where you're going, and you're right. It just doesn't matter. There's nothing that's going to keep you from staying on your path to achieve your goal. Now, obviously, not everyone gets there. That's just the facts, you know. And I consider myself extremely lucky also that I didn't get injured and that I had the right support team around me and that I did make the right decisions when it could have been the wrong one. So there's a lot of other variables, but, you know, even if I didn't make it, I would have known that I did give it my all. And that's really what it was about, was giving your all each and every day and trying to make that dream become the reality. There's this great quote by a guy named Wilford Peterson. I use it in my speeches a lot. He says, success is focusing the full power of all you are on what you have a burning desire to achieve. And I just love that, because it is the full power of who you are. It's all of you. It's everything inside of you going for that dream. And that's the common thing that you can see in other athletes that get to those levels in any sport, and also for anybody in any walk of life to achieve anything, they have that inner thing going on. It's kind of cool.
When you talk about just gymnastics for a minute, because I'm certain there are people listening that love gymnastics, are gymnasts, and so forth. What do you think is the difference between, and you can rephrase me here a little bit if you need to, but like a high school gymnast, a college gymnast, an aspiring Olympic gymnast, an actual Olympic gymnast, and a medal winner? What does it take to go from that to that?
Like the various levels?
Yeah, like what's it really take to stand on that podium with that gold medal around your neck?
Oh,
I think it's a
fantastic question, because most people have no clue about those different levels, and neither did I when I was going through it. I was just doing my thing. But looking back on it, the same way I could look and say, were there other things operating in the universe that I didn't know about? Yeah, I think so. But I think the best way to describe what you're asking is I'll do it with a story. Remember Carl, everyone knows Carl Lewis, the great Olympic track athlete, won 4 gold medals in L.A. He has a sister, Carol Lewis, that many people know also, and she was a track athlete too. And one day she was at UCLA, and we were friends, and I said, hey, Carol, let me run with you. I want to see how fast I am compared to somebody at your level. She goes, are you sure? And I go, yeah. She goes, all right, let's go do it. So we start out on the track field, and she says, okay, just go whenever you're ready. And I said, okay, I guess we won't make it official. So I just start running, okay? And I look over to her, and she's, you know, smiling next to me, keeping pace with me. And she says, is that all you got, Mitch? And I said, no. I said, I just wanted to see what you were doing, right? So then she goes, come on, kick it into high gear. So I run as fast as I possibly can. And obviously I can still see her out of the corner of my eye, and she's still smiling at me effortlessly. And I said, this is just ridiculous. And she's laughing and laughing, and she goes, Mitch, now you know how I feel when I run against Carl. So those are the levels. It's almost incomprehensible, the different levels. And you see it, like, if you ever got in the pool with an Olympic swimmer and you tried to keep pace, they would look like they're walking while you were swimming as fast as you could. So, you know, in gymnastics, it's kind of the same thing. It's just a whole other level of attainment of what you're able to do and what you're capable of doing. It's unreal.
Tell us about, like, what part of that is gift? You know, what part of that is determination? What part of that is, like you said, sensing, awakening to this full potential power and putting it in that desire?
Well, another great question. I like you guys. Okay, there's two schools of thought here. One is, you know, that you have to have this natural talent in order to make it to those levels. I could give you case after case after case of people who had as much natural ability as I had but never put in the work. They never made it. Then there's the guy who has this incredible, incredible work ethic with very little natural ability but incredible determination and discipline. That's Peter Vidmar, okay? Peter Vidmar did not have the natural ability that I had. I used to piss him off more than anything because I can just do the hard tricks, you know, very easily. But I looked at him and I learned about discipline and work ethic that I never had until those later years. So we both made it from having a combination of all of it, Gary. That's the truth. You know, everybody's got certain skills and talents, but, you know, if you're not working it and being disciplined and putting in the hours, it never manifests.
So let's raise the bar a little more even here. Okay, so here you are, you know, you're gifted, your mindset's there and everything, and now we're just going to make some skills up. And we've got a Gaylord flip and a Gaylord two. Those are the most difficult, amazing things in gymnastics. How do you go about doing something like that, where you actually invent things?
Yeah, amazing. Thank you. That's just what motivated me. I always wanted to take the sport to another level. And when I first started out, you know, 12 and 13 years old, and I would compete, I would try to do the most exciting moves that I possibly could because I enjoyed making the crowd, you know, applaud and go, you know, what was that? Oh, that was cool. And ever since those early days, I realized that it was inspiring for both me and the audience, and I like to be the guy that did the risky things. And so the Gaylord flip happened my first year in college, and that came from an actual dream. I literally woke up one night having dreamt that move. Nobody was really flying over the high bar in the early 80s. That's when that happened. They were doing the release move on one side of the high bar. And so I thought, wouldn't it be cool to flip over the bar and catch it on the other side? And that's how it happened. I walked into the gym and I asked my coach, Art Sherlock, you think this is possible? I dreamt this last night. And he, being the great coach that he was, said there's only one way to find out. Let's put it in the belt, in the spotting belts.
Nice.
And we started training it that day. And I think I caught it on the fourth try. That's how vivid it was in my dream. And it just, it worked. And I kind of became known as a risk taker in the sport. And I wanted to keep doing that. And then the Gaylord 2 came about a few years after that, and that's the one I competed in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I'm really
I
proud of that, by the way. I mean, get me wrong.
I'm
I love the medals. No, I love the medals, but I also love the fact that people are still doing that skill to this day. So that's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching that going and my jaw dropped. I'm like, did you see what he just did? You know, kind of moment. And I bet so many people, I guess, still gives me goosebumps now thinking about that. But I remember that moment watching you do that and just being in awe. So it's really neat to hear the backstory behind that. Thank you for that. Very cool.
That skill never would have came about had there not been compulsories back in the early 80s where the compulsories were kind of like those old figure eights. If the audience remembers back in those days, that it's that boring stuff, and we had it in gymnastics, but the dismount on high bar was a hecht, and a hecht dismount is very similar to the build-up to the Gaylord flip, so it kept getting the two skills confused. So I stopped using the Gaylord flip because I started missing it all the time. And I thought I got to do something else because I loved, you know, bringing the crowd to the feet. So that's how the Gaylord 2 came about.
You talk right now with such great energy. And this was so many years ago. So how does it feel to either talk about it or to know you gave it your all? You, as the quote said, you just allowed that to happen. How does it feel today?
Well, it feels the same as it did 30 years ago, believe it or not. I still get that inspiring feeling within me, and that's why I love to go in front of audience and talk about it and share that feeling, because you know, it's rare that people get to experience something like that, and you don't have to actually be in the games to experience that excitement. I mean, just watching it, you can get those feelings, and you know, the more people have that in their daily life and apply it to whatever they're doing, the better. So I'm the same way. I like feeling that way. I like being high on life and feeling inspired. So I like talking about it. I like reliving it. You just can't get stuck there, you know. You got to keep pushing forward and doing other things in life too. Because I've seen those athletes as well, where you know, those are the best days of their life. Sorry, I'm talking over you.
No, keep going. Don't stop there. Keep going. Keep going there. Yeah.
Yeah, you see people that they get stuck in those days and they feel like their life's over after it. You know, it's the old astronaut thing where they've been to the moon. Now what? You know, or been in space, now what? And I just refuse to go there because it's easy. You know, you could consider that the highlight of your life, and then you miss out on the joy and everything else. And, you know, as you get older, you realize there's joy all around you. It doesn't have to be by you having the ultimate success each and every day. You know, that's just not attainable. So you find those other places in life that inspire you.
What challenging
is that for you?
Go ahead.
What is that for you these days, or how did you make that transition? What did you do? Was it rocky? Was it bumpy? Was it easy?
It's a very challenging transition. It's very challenging, and especially when you're young. You know, when you have that kind of success at a young age. I was 23 in the Olympics, so I was a little bit older than the women are. The women, you know, they peak at 17 and 18 years old, as you know. So I think their transition is a lot more challenging just because of the maturity level. But it's tough. It's really tough because you kind of feel like you have to maintain that level. And it's literally, I think it's impossible. In any walk of life, it's impossible to maintain it, especially in sports, though. Your body just can't stay there. But, you know, then you try to do it somewhere else. And, you know, I did the movie American Anthem afterwards, and I thought, oh, it's going to be a blockbuster, and I'm going to be this actor now. And that didn't happen. So there's like this huge letdown going, did I just knock myself off my own pedestal? What happened here? You know, it's kind of funny.
No, you didn't.
Thank you.
No.
Yeah, people are still talking about the Olympics 30 years later, but not American Anthem. So
I talk about
there's
American
your answer.
Anthem, so I'll keep it alive for you.
Thanks.
It's one of those cult movies that keeps on going. We love it. We love it. No, wait a minute. Wait a minute, Elizabeth.
So.
Elizabeth, are you saying you saw American Anthem?
Probably about 150 times. I know. Not that many, but it's just a great, inspiring movie, and it you know, I don't know, just a good movie. I love anything with gymnastics, but that movie with you and having seen you succeed at the Olympics, it's just greatness. I don't know. It just was like, there is greatness right there. And
that's really nice of you to say. Thank you.
Yeah. Yep. You're forever idle. It's just fun. Do you,
the one thing I learned through that whole experience is how little control you have over the world of acting and movies and TV and all that, and how much control I used to have in sports, you know? I like the one where you have control over your destiny, you know, the one where the work you put in, it's on you, you know. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's so much out of your control when you do something of that magnitude, and that was a big lesson for me.
When you walk into a gym today and there's rings there or, you know, any kind of gymnastic equipment, what I have this thing I want to do, and that's like go to a gym and go fly around the uneven parallel bars and get on the balance beam and all this stuff, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute. You have four teenage boys and you're 44. No, we're not doing that. We're gonna, you know, no.
Yes.
Do you have
better judgment
that same...
took over?
Yeah, takes over. Do you have
Did you
that
say
same
better
feeling?
Judgment takes over?
Yeah, better judgment takes over when your mind thinks you can still do that, but there's no way you really can. And it's true, you cannot still do it. There's no way I can get up on the high bar and swing around, do giants, fly up in the air, and flip over the bar and catch it on the other side at this age. I just can't do it, and I don't want to do it.
Well, wait a minute. Now, how do you know you can't do it?
Well, the last time I tried to do something...
So you
was
yeah,
in 19...
give me both.
When was this? 1996. So
okay,
what is that?
Okay.
12 years after the Olympics. I was doing a conference with a sponsor of the Olympic Games. It was a 4-day conference, and they wanted me to host their booth at this big thing, this big trade show. So I said, that's great. I'll use the microphone as long as you got some gymnast there to do the demonstrating, because I really don't do this stuff anymore. They're like, well, you can still do some of it, can't you? And I said, yeah, I could do a few handstands or this and that. Anyways, the last show, this little kid who had been working his butt off, you know, every single show doing all the hard stuff while I just had a microphone, grabbed the microphone out of my hand and says, ladies and gentlemen, how many of you here want to see, you know, Mitch Gaylor do something? And I'm like, you little,
great.
You know what? And I said, I'm going to show this guy. So I went up there, and, you know, the crowd's cheering me on, and I thought, all right, I'm just going to press up to a handstand, swing down, and do my double back dismount, the one I did at the Olympics, no problem.
Oh, just like that, yeah, okay.
Just like that. So I'm in the handstand feeling nice and strong, everything's balanced, and I swing down, and even on the swing down, I knew I was in trouble just because it didn't feel right, and I popped up in the air, and I rotated twice. I did do my double flip, but the ground came up and smacked me in the forehead and my kneecaps.
So
I did like this 3-point splat landing on the ground, and I just thought, you know what, this is just not for me anymore.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
with practice.
yeah. Well,
now, having
don't
said
you know,
that,
don't you
I,
feel
I will
that
tell enough? You, if in the air, like the flipping and the twisting, I could still do all of that, all of it,
yeah,
you know, like
exactly.
on a trampoline or a diving board. It's the timing on the equipment and how precise you need to be in order to do that stuff. And if you're not precise, you will get injured. And I just don't want to go there.
Yeah. Do you walk around the house on your hands with your kids?
I do.
In a handstand.
I do.
Oh,
I do.
Yay.
I do push-ups. I do push-ups with them on my back, and I do handstands.
Oh, I love
and,
it.
And we have a blast. And my son... he's 3 and a half, and he definitely has the gene. You can see it in him already. And the reason I know this is my wife and I, we have a treadmill in the room, okay? So he comes in, and there's a bar on the treadmill. This was when he was about 14 months old. And, you know, he was hanging on the bar, and I was like, oh, isn't that cute? He's hanging on the bar, right? So my wife and I are looking at him, and we pull out the camera just to show him hanging on the bar. We're like, hey, Luke, you know, see if you can do a pull-up. And he starts lifting his legs, like leg raises, in the pike position. And he does about 5 or 6 of them with this big grin on his face. So you know he's got this core strength in him. And he even had form on it, which was cracking me up. And he never saw me do gymnastics at that point.
Oh, wow.
So I was just like, wow, there's some serious core strength going on there and strength to
is.
Weight ratio.
Now, what are you doing with that in your head?
In my head, I'm praying to God that he doesn't go down that path of gymnastics.
Really?
To be honest with you.
Tell
I mean,
us more.
It doesn't
more.
Sound right, but it's true. I mean, if it's his passion and he really wants to do it, then obviously I'm going to support him. Mm-hmm. But, man, I just know I just know what it's all about and the culture and what it takes to get there and the odds against it. And unless he's got that, what I talked about at the beginning, that burning desire and, you know, that passion for it, then I'd like to see him do some other things. And I think he's going to be big, too. He's got these big old paws on him, and he walks around with his shoulders back like a stud. It's pretty funny. So
what did you give up? You know, did you miss anything? Did you miss teenagerish? Did you miss childhood? Did you miss young adult? Meaning miss it as in you had to maybe sacrifice or give it up for something else? Or did you see it all and try to participate?
I never look back and feel like I missed out on anything because I wouldn't have wanted to do anything else at the time. So I didn't feel like I missed out. It was just what I did and what I loved. Looking back on it, yeah, you know, I can say, okay, I guess I missed out on a few things here and there. The most important thing is I felt like I lived in a bubble. So, you know, when you get out into the real world, there was a lot of eye-openers and things that happened and people that weren't really there to support you. And there was, you know, people that, you know, tried to take advantage of, you know, of whatever their agenda was. And those kinds of things were, wow, you know, I kind of missed all that growing up. Because you are kind of sheltered, you know, you're protected by that world and the people that are there to support you and help you achieve your goal. And they kind of keep everything else away from you. So a lot of life lessons for me occurred after the Olympics.
So talk to us a little bit about the people involved. I mean, did you do it on your own, or what are those kinds of people involved?
Yeah, I don't think anybody – it's rare that anybody makes it on their own. The quality that you have, that inner drive, definitely is an individual thing. But to nurture your talent and to, you know, help you through the tough times – and I mean, the coach becomes – just an incredibly important figure in your life. Your teammates become incredibly important. The culture of the gym that you're training in becomes incredibly important, you know, and your family, your friends, you know. It's that whole circle that has to all be working together. And you find if you know, one of those elements isn't supporting, you know, where you're going, you got to make adjustments and changes. And, you know, I had to deal with all that kind of stuff. You know, but the greatest coach I ever had was Kurt Thomas, if you remember him. He was
sure.
He was before the Olympics before me. Unfortunately, we boycotted in 80, so he didn't get to fulfill his dream of going to the Olympics and winning medals. But he was certainly my idol, and he became my coach after the situation I was in was not working out. And I don't want to go into that whole story because, you know, I don't like to dwell on the negatives. But
sure.
for very specific reasons, I needed to make a move. And Kurt was in Moscow in 1981 at the World Championships. And I was the alternate on that team, which basically meant I got to watch my teammates compete. And it was painful because I should have been a competitor on the team. I just choked in the trials leading up to the games. Just, you know, just some head stuff going on with me. And on the flight back, Kurt asked me to come sit with him. He wanted to talk with me, and he was the commentator of the games. So, of course, I was, you know, completely honored, and I sat down with him, and he said, look, man, he goes, and, oh, by the way, backtrack a little bit. We did terrible. Our team did terrible there. Nobody hit their routines, and it was, you know, in Moscow, and it was an unfriendly environment, and it was just really bad for U.S. men's gymnastics. And Kurt said, he goes, you know what, Mitch? He said, there's no reason in the world why you shouldn't be leading this American team. You have the most talent. You're the only one, in my opinion, who could, you know, you and Vidmar could win medals. And he goes, but you should be leading this country. What's going on with you? Why do you choke and this and that? And I, you know, said, I really don't know, Kurt. I said, I just feel intimidated sometimes when I get into competitions, and that's what happens, and I don't perform at my best. Long story short, he was going on tour in a few months after that, creating this professional tour, and he asked me if I wanted to go on the tour as an amateur, and he would train me the whole time.
Wow.
And I had that gut feeling,
cool.
Just like you're saying, that wow feeling. I couldn't believe it. The entire flight, I was just buzzing with energy and excitement, and I couldn't wait to get home. And and tell my parents, hey, I'm leaving a full-ride scholarship at UCLA to train with Kurt Thomas. That was a fun conversation. But they actually supported it. You know, talk about parents making, I guess, a decision that probably goes against every bone in their body, you know. But they knew that if they didn't support it and if they didn't say, you know what, this is Mitch's path to his goal. I mean, they just sensed it in my energy and excitement level and my conviction that I knew darn well I needed to be trained by this guy. I just knew it. And they gave me their blessing, and off I went on a 3-month journey. And during that 3 months, Kurt had me performing every night as the amateur gymnast going for the Olympic gold medal and going for the Olympic gold. And here's what I learned, guys. I learned the joy of performing instead of the fear of competition.
Bingo.
And it's a huge, ready for this word, Gary, distinction.
I've heard that word before.
Yes. But it's true. It was completely different mindset. I loved performing in front of a crowd instead of worrying about the results of a competition and what place I was in and all this and that. And after that 3 months, I went from number 8 in the country to number 1 in the country very quickly, and I stayed there through 83 and 84.
Oh, I am so glad you sat down with him and weren't angry and grumpy. Like, you could have been, like, pissed. You know, you could have had a totally different thing, like, oh, I just sat here the whole time, and I don't want to have a conversation with you, and, you know, kind of thing,
yeah.
But you were open. What was the deciding openness, you know, the decision to be receptive to him?
I was so upset with myself, Elizabeth, because I knew I wasn't competing to my potential. And having to sit there in the stands and watching my teammates out there when I knew in my heart that I was as good as my teammates, if not better than many of them. No disrespect. But
no, we love all gymnasts.
Yes, but I just knew I was meant to be out there, and I was a head case, and it was really so upsetting to me, and I knew I needed to make a big change. And Kurt, it was just like synchronicity, you know. It was that. It was just that time on that flight. And Kurt and I, you know, he's out here, by the way. He lives in Frisco, and he runs his own gymnastics center out here. And when I moved out here about 3 years ago, I looked him up because I hadn't talked to him in about at least 18 years. And he and I are buddies again, and it's just wonderful after all these years. And he's just a great, great guy and an incredible influence in my life and my gymnastics.
That is so awesome.
Yeah,
he's another one of my gymnastic idols. That's so cool
to
know that. I love backstories on things of how things happen. We have I know you're not in love with social media, but we have a live chat room going on during the whole show. And Deborah,
and they're counting how many times they're counting how many times they've all seen the movie. I think that's what.
Yeah, you guys better fess up, all you guys. Deborah Oakland, you and I have had this chat before about how many times we've seen this movie, and it's a little hush hush thing that we never admit. Anyway, Deborah wants to know what was the best mental strength training Mitch used when the stress levels were high, or when he was injured and had to carry on. What was the best mental strength training you had?
Well, when
and
you're injured and have to carry on, or if you have a setback, I had many, not many injuries. I was fortunate with that, but I definitely had some down moments, you know, where I didn't, like I said, compete to my best, or I had tough competitions and made mistakes and things didn't end up the way I wanted to. It just, for me, it added fuel to the fire. It always did. It always did. And I know that's not the case for everybody, because some people, you know, they get that self-defeating behavior going on, and it just gets worse and worse and worse into a downward spiral. And I guess I don't know how to explain how to do that. I think it's the awareness that don't go there. Don't beat yourself up. You know, it's always a learning process, and it's you know, the two steps forward, one step back, you know, situation. That does happen, and you have to realize that, you know, you got to go through those down moments in order to get to the higher levels. So I think it's a time for understanding, you know, what happened, evaluating it, and then learning from it and moving forward with a new sense of purpose and passion about it. Fuel to the fire.
Yeah, it's there to strengthen you.
Yes, yeah. I don't know anybody who made it without going through ups and downs, but that is the common denominator, as you know, Gary, that the people that get to those high levels, they never let the downs keep them down. Mm-hmm. They learn from it and move forward. They're back in the game right away.
How did you guys meet?
We met at at a seminar.
Sorry, I'm just really curious how you guys met, because Gary's not a gymnast.
I was having an emotional moment at a seminar.
We were there. Yeah, go ahead.
You want to tell it or should I?
No, you can tell it. But, I mean, all I was going to add was who else was in our little circle of an emotional moment, that's all. Do you remember?
Yeah, this guy by the name of Tony Robbins. It was at his master university in Hawaii.
And Rick Springfield and me and Mitch. I mean, it was, like, intense.
It was. And
God, I wish I was there.
I just thought, who is this stranger consoling me while I'm having this, like, emotional moment because I was feeling... I was just feeling something because of the exercise we were doing. And he goes, man, I know you. You're this Olympic champion. You are a champion. And he gave me this motivational talk, and I was like, all right, you're a cool guy. What's your name?
Oh, that's awesome.
And then, you know, I ended up training with Gary for years, and Gary taught me about endurance because, you know, gymnastics is, what is it, 30 to 40 seconds max on a routine?
Exactly.
And I just never did endurance training, and that's what Gary was all about, and I started training with him, and he taught me a lot about the human body, about human potential, about a whole other way to train. And it was exciting, man. Very cool stuff.
Yeah.
We've had some time. I know you're here and everything, and we're talking about you, but Mitch,
that's
Gary's
cool.
Brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
I think he's got a gift. And, you know, we all have gifts in different areas, and he's an inspirational guy. Is he still listening?
Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
You're making a difference out there.
I'm honored. Thank you.
Here's another one. Cody Oakland says, hi. Cody and Mitch went through gymnastics at one of my favorite places, Squaw Valley.
Yeah. Northern California.
Yeah.
I did a gymnastics camp there. I was training. I don't know if I was training with him. It was kind of a summer deal. And my brother went to UC Davis, and I was traveling with him and his buddies, and there was a big camp up there, and the great memories at Squaw Valley.
Yeah. I'd love to take that tram up to High Camp.
Yes.
That's pretty up there. Squaw Valley is very beautiful.
I know you're teaching, you're assisting, you're opening up adult minds. How often do you get involved with kids?
Oh, all the time. I love it. Out here in Texas, I've gone to several gyms and given talks, and I just love doing that because, you know, if I had a person who had experienced, you know, what I have through the Olympics come talk to me when I was going through those training days,
yeah.
I mean, it's just a huge benefit. It's a wonderful thing. So I like to give back like that whenever I can, and I'm always very conscious of the parents too, because the parents sit in on those talks, and what I try to do is really emphasize the importance of parenting a kid correctly while they're going through it as well, because, you know, you get the little league parent mindset where they're pushing and pushing and pushing, and it's not really coming from the kid, and the kid ends up burning out, they end up resenting the parents, and it's no good for anybody, you know. So parents really have to understand that, you know, for kids to take it to those higher levels, it really has to be something that comes from them, from within their child, and not something put on them from what they want or what, you know, the coaches want. It's really important, but I love doing that.
I couldn't agree with you more right there. That is so
Elizabeth,
very, very important.
I love your idea. I mean, a parents camp.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
For young athletes.
We need one. I heard Little League loud and clear,
mm-hmm.
and I have a baseball player. I have four boys, and they're 12, 14, 16, and 18, and one of them has not a forced parent baseball love, but a real baseball love. He grabbed a baseball when he could crawl kind of love, and and it's so interesting to see the passion behind, you know, whatever he's going to do with baseball. He's going to do, we're just here sort of helping guide a little bit, and passion. There's such a difference in a kiddo who sort of loves something versus loves something. It's
oh, yeah.
Wild.
You can really see it.
You can just tell.
It's cool to
see
it.
Oh, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's so
in
cool.
Anything in life, I think.
Yeah.
You know, anybody
so how was it? How was it competing in L.A., growing up in L.A.? I mean, versus, like, Sochi right now in like, politically sensitive, let's say, Russia right now.
Right. It was the best. I mean, I get asked that question a lot because people sometimes say, aren't you disappointed you didn't get to go somewhere for the Olympics? I said, are you kidding me? Have you ever heard of home court advantage? You know, have you ever heard of no jet lag and competing in a friendly environment? Because I traveled around the world from 1979 through 1984. I've been so many places and competed, and it's hard to compete sometimes in a different environment where the crowd, you know, doesn't know you and they're not cheering for you, and you do have jet lag and you're tired and it's different equipment. So being in L.A. was, I thought, the greatest thing in the world, and not only that, it was at UCLA, and that's where I went to college. So it was really, you know, a comfortable feeling for me, and I'm just really thankful that it was here.
We need to do a little commercial.
Go for it.
Sorry, we have to take a break. So we have the, if there were like a gold medal coffee maker, we've got it, I guess. This is the Olympics of the, I don't know, this coffee maker is incredible. But we have a sponsor, we have a couple sponsors that we need to mention, and one of them is Blog Talk Radio. Thank you very much to everyone at Blog Talk Radio for opening up your hearts and your technology to us and our idea. They've been with Gary and I since the second we said we wanted to do this, and they figured out how to make it happen. And thank you so much for your support. They're featuring some of our shows and our guests, and they've got a chat room going, and it's just really wonderful. So thank you to everybody at Blog Talk Radio. And then the other people we need to thank, I got a handwritten note this morning and a coffee maker from iCoffee, and they're a big conference sponsor to us. And like I said, they're the kind of the gold medal of coffee makers. Remington introduces iCoffee. It's at iCoffee.com. And this is the first new coffee brewing technology in over 50 years. And Mitch, here's perfection. According to inventor Bruce Burroughs, it took him 7 years and over 1,257 prototypes to perfect this product. How's that for dedication?
Talk
and
about
focus?
Persistence. Impressive.
Yeah. Amen to persistence. But this, my husband used this coffee maker this morning, and he's very particular with coffee being hot and brewed strong enough and so forth. And he said, wow, that's a really good cup of coffee. And we took a picture of it and put it on Facebook. So if you get a chance, go to iCoffee.com. And everybody, I'll be quiet here in a minute, but everybody, we'll bring back Mitch, everybody who is registered for our conference is automatically entered to win a coffee maker. So we'll be choosing one at the end of the conference to win. So thank you. Back to Mitch. Back to gymnastics. Back to Gary. Thank you.
Well, maybe there's some people out there listening that may desire to have you speak, maybe at their organization or so forth. Tell us about your Raising the Bar program. It just sounds awesome.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, Raising the Bar came about, I think, around 3 years ago, and it's kind of the culmination of, you know, the different speeches I've done over the years, and I kind of figured out there's one theme that resonates with me more than anything, and it's raising the bar. And for me, it's just all about, no matter what it is that you're doing in life, in any walk of life, there's always something more that you can pull out of yourself to raise that bar, not only for you and what you're doing, but for others. And a lot of the speech hits upon how everybody, you know, the pay it forward thing. We're all inspired by somebody else who was there before us and did something. And you see that so much with athletes. You know, if you look at, you know, Mary Lou Retton, she was, you know, Nadia was her idol. And, you know, like I told you, Kurt Thomas was one of those guys for me. And Carl Lewis, you know, he had Jesse Owens was the guy who won the four gold medals before him. And you look at Michael Phelps today. You know, you're trying to tell me he didn't, you know, grow up thinking Mark Spitz's record was his,
right?
You know, so it's like it is paying it forward, and it's raising the bar for others, and it's very inspirational to me, and that's the kind of feedback I get from audiences too, is they really feel inspired by it. And I basically break it down into pretty much five keys, in my opinion, that are common for people who do raise the bar and hit those high levels. And just real quickly, it's to get focused, to become committed, to be strategic, to get going, and the fifth one is to get resilient. And I dig deep into all those and have incredible inspirational stories within them.
Is that also for kids by any chance?
It is.
I modify it
depending on the age of the audience or if it's a group of professionals versus, you know, middle school or high school.
Yeah, that's true what you say, though. Those kids completely, people too, but kids especially, they have role models in all of you athletes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cam's email is Mini Damon.
Very cool. Yeah.
You know,
no, it's those things
true.
That we identify
really,
with
really
that inspire
important.
Us. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Talk to us. Maybe you know the difference, or is it the same from back then until now, about how easy it is to get distracted as a kid going on your path?
Yeah. I think there's more distractions nowadays than there was, you know, 30 years ago when I was training. I mean, just with the we keep talking about social media, but it's true. I mean, people are sitting there texting all day long and going online and going to Facebook, et cetera, Twitter. But my belief is that the focused athlete, the one who's really committed to making it, they are still as tunnel-visioned as we were 30 years ago, because that's just what it takes, and that's just what happens when you're operating on that level. But I think for most people out there, you know, who don't have such a huge, big vision of going to the Olympics, I think there's lots of distractions out there. I shouldn't say going to the Olympics. I should say any big visions for themselves in any walk of life or anything that they're doing.
You know, so. I just want you to know that somebody just emailed me as we were talking, and I'm not going to tell you who it is, and it's nobody you know. It's somebody I went to school with, but they just said listening to you just changed their life.
Oh, wow. That just gave me the,
how cool
the chills there.
That?
That's
yeah.
very cool.
Awesome.
Listening to you just now changed their life.
Wow.
Huh.
I'd love to hear more, like find out in what way. That would be really cool.
Yeah, I will. I'll follow up, and I'll follow up with Gary, and he can give the information to you. But how isn't that neat, the power that words and just being here today have?
An experience.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And it's
speaking
it,
from pure experience.
Mm-hmm.
And pure heart. You have such a great heart.
What was challenging after?
Thanks.
After. So you're gold medalist, you're Mitch Gaylord, you're doing a movie, and then what starts to happen for a few years?
I think for a few years I went off course for a while. Just, you know, you think that, hey, I must have missed out on everything, you know, during those high school and college years. I'm going to just kind of check out for a while. I, to be honest with you, Gary, the movie was a huge disappointment for me that it didn't send me off into a new direction. I thought at the time that I really wanted to be an actor and keep moving down that road. Now it's laughable to me that I ever thought that. I don't feel that at all anymore. But at that time I did. And so that was kind of gone, like very, very quickly. And I kind of wandered for a while because I didn't feel like I had passion and purpose anymore. It was just gone. And that was the toughest adjustment for me, because there's no way I was doing any more gymnastics. You know, I knew immediately after the Olympics that this was it. This was the pinnacle of my career, and I'm good with it, and I'm moving on. But to replace that was a big challenge for me, and that was the toughest transition, I would say. It was during the later part of the 80s, right around there.
You know,
so you weren't going to the moon.
Yeah.
I think that happens to us all in various ways. I really agree. I think it might not be on the magnitude of, you know, Olympics, but I really do think that we all, we age, we change, we maneuver, we do different things, we make choices. And I'm curious what you, I hear you, this is a moment for you. You had a choice to keep going forward or stumble and fumble. What did you do to keep going?
I actually, when I started reading a lot of books and started to understand what my Olympic journey was about more on the psychological and spiritual level, I started to really take notice of what it was. Why was I so happy? I didn't know. I was just doing gymnastics, you know. And I discovered through that process that, you know, life is about giving, not about what you get. And that was a huge, huge lesson for me, because as an athlete, it's very much about, you know, what you're doing and what you're trying to achieve on your own. You don't really think so much about, hey, what am I giving to the world here through my brilliant athletic performance? You're very focused on, here's my goal, I want to go to the Olympics, and I want to win some medals. And it's all me, 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 me. And, you know, the great memory from those games turned out to be our team winning the gold medal, because we did it together and we pulled in together and we made history together, and that was bigger than all of us. And that's what brought the country, not brought the country to us, but it gave us recognition because people identified with that. And then we realized, hey, wow, we just made a lot of people really happy. So that was the giving part. I just didn't realize it until it happened, that we really do give to others because of what we do. But years later, I know I'm talking in circles here, but that became the big lesson, is to find that again. Where can I give? Where can I be of service? Where can I make a difference in other people's lives? It's not really all about me. And through that giving became, there was happiness and fulfillment. And so I just kept going along that path.
Awesome.
There's my spiritual lesson for the day, kids.
I love it. we've had lots of callers. I think I have one in particular who would like to actually ask you a question. Do you mind taking a call?
Not at
somebody,
all.
Or should I? Okay, I have no idea if they want to hold or listen, so we're going to find out. I just didn't want to have them miss their opportunity to speak with you if they wanted to.
Okay.
So. It's loud. Caller from the 512 area code, would you like to ask a question? Or are you just listening? I've got you live. Okay, nope. I can hear myself in their background.
Yeah, I can hear the feedback.
Yeah, we'll try it again. If you want to ask a question, just go in the chat room then. And we've got a live chat going, and you can type it in, and I'll just ask. So, okay, I'm glad I did that, though. I just didn't want somebody to miss out.
So, you know, we've got replays and downloads, so we're going to be able to listen to this, you know, over and over, or we can share it. So let's say we've got a young group of athletes or a young group of aspiring something out mm-hmm. there. Give them 1, 2, 3 tips. What comes right off the top of your head?
Make sure you're doing what you love is number one. Mm-hmm. Understand that nobody gets there without ups and downs, and you will experience it, and that's how you're going to build your character. That's going to reveal your character, is how you get through those ups and downs. And then the third one is to absolutely, I guess this goes with the first one. So the first one must be really important. Enjoy the process. Enjoy it. Love it.
Yeah.
It's really all about that. That's what we've got. And not everybody makes it, as you know. So it's more about the love of what you do, and you can take that passion with you anywhere. You don't have to hit those top levels in order to feel fulfilled. You can be strategic, like I said in my speech, and kind of get flexible and modify the course that you're on.
And now, from the eyes that you have, the glasses you look through years and years later, is there any 1 or 2 things you can also add with that perspective?
I think I just said it all, Gary.
Are you saying then 20, 30 years later, you're going to know whether you did what you loved or if you handled your ups and your downs?
Okay, you just inspired a thought. The thought is don't have any regrets. Don't have any regrets. Give it your all. Give it your all. And if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. But if you gave it your all, you can always look in the mirror with that sense of pride and self-satisfaction that you didn't hold back. Maybe that wasn't meant to be your ultimate path, and you know, maybe another door opened, but you put it all out there. Try to do that with everything.
So I was just texted, got the inside track going here.
Mm-hmm.
A question. May I ask one more?
Sure.
What's your most profound wow now moment in your journey?
Most profound wow. That's a cool question. Well, if I mean, we're so focused on that Olympic journey, and so that's where my brain just went. So I'll go there. And this was in senior in high school. It was at the Junior Olympics, and my whole family flew to New York to watch me to compete on a national level. And I was so incredibly intimidated by other people on the same floor with me that I had read about or saw in magazines. And I had the most pathetic competition of my life at that point, and I didn't make the cut to go on to the junior national team. It was the single most disappointing event in my whole gymnastics career. And the wow moment, to answer your question, was that this is a turning point for me. And it's kind of like that fork in the road that you choose to go down. One was the self-destructive, hey, this isn't for me, I'll never make it, I'm just not to be on this, meant to be on this level. And the other one is, I will never, ever let this happen to me again. I will never let myself not compete to my full ability because of mental stuff. And it lit a fire under me that took me from that point all the way to the Olympics. So it was very clear to me, very clear wow moment.
And thank you so much for the person that texted me that question. I really appreciate it, and what a beautiful answer.
Thank you.
Our most profound moments are sometimes not in a happy moment.
Very true. Yeah. Very, very true.
So we're running out of time, but can we ask about your beautiful wife, Valentina? Did I say her name right?
This you did, and name. Of course you can. I love talking about her.
Yeah, I would love to know, was she with you the whole time that you were a gymnast, or did you meet her later, or, you know, just a little bit about her, because she sounds like she's really cool.
She's amazing. I feel incredibly blessed and fortunate to have her in my life, I'll tell you that right now. We met about 10 years ago, and our paths were, I don't know how to describe it, we were kind of on similar paths, and it was one of those moments where, you know, that's called love at first sight right there. You know, we saw each other, we knew we were meant for each other, and that's all she wrote. And she's just a beautiful person inside and out, and she's an incredible mother, an incredible wife, and she's a recording artist. She's got music out there, and she's about to do her next album, which I can't wait to hear.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, if we can support her anyway, and best ever you, let me know. We'd love to figure
it out. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, her music's on iTunes right now. So she's got one album out there, and then she's doing her next one. And I just can't wait for it to come out there. It'll be unbelievable.
Now, can
And if you don't mind me plugging something, because my site's not really up and running,
sure,
if anybody is interested in hiring me for a speech or for an appearance or whatever, you could always just go to my wife's email, because she does the bookings for that, and it's basically valentinagaylord@gmail.com.
Oh, great.
valentinagaylord@gmail.com. If you want to book Mitch to totally raise the bar of energy in the room, whatever room he's in.
Well, thank you, Gary.
Can any of the kids sing?
My daughter sings all the time. She's total girly girl and wants to perform and's got the dresses on and the dancing around the house.
Adorable.
So we've got the she's as cute as can be. She's our little princess, and her name's Valletta. My wife is from Malta, and Valletta is the capital of Malta, and we named her Valletta, and it fits her really well. And then Luke, the 3.5-year-old, he's, like I said, he's the athlete. His nickname is Tough Guy, because he'll take you down. He likes to tackle you.
Cute.
Yeah.
Oh, funny. All right.
That is so awesome. Hey, Mitch, we really appreciate it. We understand you're busy, and it's been so, so special. And, of course, it's always a delight to hook up with you. And Elizabeth, how are you feeling?
Much better.
She's been looking forward to this for so long, and it's great.
I really was. Seriously, we get to talk to Mitch.
She still has burning desire in gymnastics. Exactly.
I do.
Cool. I really enjoyed talking with you guys. It was really
awesome.
A wonderful hour to spend, and I understand I'm in really great company. Some of those names that you mentioned before I came on the air there were very impressive people. Keep doing what you're doing.
We'll do it again. We'll do it again. Yeah. Looking forward to it. All right. Thanks, Mitch.
All right. Absolutely.
All right. Have a nice day.
Oops, I'm sorry. He said you too. Yeah, sorry. Oh, he's so sweet and so inspiring.
Very.
Like, I mean,
very authentic.
Very authentic. That's a great word, authentic. And I just, that mindset of, I love the comparison to between the athlete, you know, the comparison he gave of what it takes to be an Olympic athlete. I love that. I'm going to play this for Cam.
Yeah, absolutely. Any youngster that is on their path needs to listen to this a couple of times. There's such wisdom there. And, you know, as we suggested before, you can hang out for an hour with a master of their gift, a master of their sport, and it's worth years and years in some educational curriculum. And that's sometimes all it takes to keep somebody on the straight and narrow and connected. To what's burning inside them too, and Mitch's story. I mean, again, we just spent an hour, but there's, you know, the highs and the lows and the human experience, you know, all the way through it. And it's so great to hear him at such peace and what he's doing now.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we should probably go. And our next speaker at 12 p.m. Pacific and 3 p.m. Eastern is Dina Castor.
And she rocks bronze medal Athens Olympics. Yes, doing what she loves too, born to run. Yeah. So
A couple people in the chat room. Julie Vick says, hello, awesome, thank you all for inspiring us. And Deborah Oakland says, what a kind, genuine man Mitch is. I agree with you guys. Wasn't that fun?
Absolutely. It's awesome.
Fire up.
Yep.
Woo-hoo.
And thanks.
The cheerleader comes out.
And thanks, Maxine from Canada, for the text, for the question at the end.
That was a great one. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. And the shows are on free replay at besteveru.com/teleconference. There are, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but we need to. The links for each show are under each speaker, and you can just click on that, and you can listen as many times as you want or share it in your social media. And that's what we've got. It's a great conference, and I'm loving all the speakers.
Talk to you soon with Dina.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the What's Percolating teleconference on Blog Talk Radio. Please visit us at besteveru.com for more ways to percolate and create your best life.